Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
As you prepare for the end of your work week, it's now time to get ready for an all-new edition of Listen In with KNN. Now, today's Thursday show will bring in a true veteran in sports media, a man who has paid his fair share of dues to the industry. That's right. I'm talking about Mr. Charlie Neal. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag listenin with KNN.
Time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sportsperson Award nominee.
Now time for Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week, where today I have the honor and privilege of honoring the one and only Mr. Dominique Wilkerson. Now I'm honoring him because he's giving back through his community through sports. And one thing I really loved in interviewing Dominique is this particular quote. He said, "In my town, not a lot of kids make it out, and I feel it's because the examples they follow are from the wrong people. I realize that I'm the positive example for my city, and I exemplify that through sports, just like sports exemplified it for me when I was obese." So without further ado, I would like to welcome Dominique to the show. Dominique, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So, I mean, tell me a little bit more about what you do and why is it so important to you to give back to children?
I grew up in Calvert County, Maryland. It's a small town. I mean, even if you look on the map, you probably couldn't find it. But when I grew up, I was very obese. I'm not even lying, about 250 pounds in the eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And I loved sports, but I just wasn't, you know, in shape to play. And I was always getting the answer no, and I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. But one day I just found a game of basketball and a coach that gave me the opportunity, and it honestly changed my life forever.
Wow. I mean, it's all about that. You know, you got that opportunity. Now you're giving an opportunity for kids. So, I mean, tell me, what exactly do you do for the kids to create a positive example for them through sports?
I'm actually just launching Wilkerson Pro Sports, which is a program in which I'm training kids in my area, also young adults. The hope is to train collegiate athletes and one day NBA players, but my foundation is really with kids. That it means a lot to me because, you know, not all kids get the appreciation they deserve, and some do need a little bit more attention when it
right.
comes to sports than others. And, you know, I feel that, you know, once you give them a path, you know, in a positive direction, they'll tend to stay on your side and they'll get better through time.
Wonderfully said. And I mean, for a kid out there, maybe, you know, right now, who's going through a tough time and maybe doesn't have that extra push, you know, to keep them going in a positive direction, what would your word of advice be to them?
I would say patience. I mean, honestly, growing up, failure is a hard thing. But as you get older, that kind of motivates you. I mean, you know, the idea that you can have a bad day and the next day you could turn around and turn that to almost a nearly perfect day with hard work and fighting through adversity.
Oh, so well said. And I mean, for people that want to learn more about the program that you're launching, where can they find out more information?
They can follow me on Twitter at WILK Pro Sports. I'm also launching a website, WilkersonProSports.com is a great way to reach me. Also on Instagram at SwooshLife12, SwooshLife12.
All right. That is perfect. And really quick, I know, aren't you still playing basketball right now yourself?
Yes. I finished the NBA camp with the NBA G League 76ers, which didn't work out, but they asked me to come back next season. And I also have one with the Washington Wizards G League, which are going to be doing their first G League team next season.
Yeah, let's go.
So I have two camps coming up that I'm also getting ready for, but by doing that, it's also getting me ready by helping kids in my time off. So it's a win-win both ways.
Perfect. Well, thank you again so much, and congratulations once again, Mr. Dominique Wilkerson, for earning honors this week as Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week. There is still lots more on the show, so be sure to stay tuned in as we have yet to welcome today's special guest. So it's now time for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch. And if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when.
Back to Listen In with K&N on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now time to add some more flavor to the show as I welcome in my special guest, ESPN play-by-play announcer Charlie Neal. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. Happy New Year. Good to be here with you.
Thanks so much. Happy New Year to you as well. I'm so excited to have you as my first guest of this 2018 year, so thanks for coming on.
Not a problem.
So briefly, I'm going to run through your bio for people that might not know you or know too much about you, and then we'll kick off the show. Sound good?
Sure.
Okay, cool. Charlie Neal joined ESPN in 2005, primarily serving as the play-by-play announcer for historically black college and university football and basketball, yes, HBCU's telecast on ESPNU. Neal started his broadcasting career over 30 years ago as a radio disc jockey before turning to television as a sportscaster working for several affiliates in the Detroit, New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. markets. He has also worked for BET, NBC, now the Black Family Channel, and TNT. Neal's broadcast credits also include hosting NBA pre-, halftime, and post-game shows and play-by-play announcing for gymnastics and track and field at the first ever Goodwill Games in Moscow in 1986. He is a native of Philadelphia. Neal is also a police motorcycle instructor for various departments in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area and is the owner of a successful tour bus company. He attended Villanova University. Wow, I mean, you're doing so many things, but you know, the Villanova part sticks out to me because, you know, that's Big East rivals. I'm a Georgetown graduate, so we'll have to see whose team does better this year come March Madness.
What happens?
That's all we can say. And tell me, I mean, how did you get into being an instructor for police motorcycles? That's such a cool, you know, nitpicky thing about your biography.
Very interesting. I started out, well, I'm a motorcycle enthusiast to begin with.
Okay.
I have my own personal bike. And I started working with the police department over in Virginia in Arlington County and working with them. And then things, you know, that was back in 1985 that I started working with them. And then things just started to snowball. I started doing instructing for them and also for the metropolitan area, the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C., and the Maryland State Police. And it's just snowballed since then. I started instructing in 1990, and I've been doing it ever since. Not only motorcycles now, I've added emergency vehicle operations, which is like for recruits that come through the police academy, emergency vehicle operations like police cars, turning
right.
out safely do responses and emergency responses and pursuits and things of this nature.
Wow, that is such just a cool thing that you do on the side in addition to everything you do. And tell me a little bit more about your tour bus company that you're the owner of.
Well, I used to own the tour bus company.
Okay.
I sold that company, but I'm still involved in the bus business, working as a general manager and operations manager for another successful tour bus company in the Washington, D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
I got into the bus business actually when I was in high school. I started working for Greyhound when I was in high school. It was,
okay.
it was a summer job, and I kept that enthusiasm for the bus business even through college. I started driving. It was a summer job when I got old enough to drive for them. When I started with them when I was in high school, of course, I wasn't old enough to drive over the highway. But I worked in the garage, I worked in the baggage department, and I did that, like I said, all through high school and then into college. And when I got old enough, I went to transferred over to the driver's side
right.
and maintained a relationship with them throughout, you know, my life. I mean, it's kind of funny. I kept a relationship. I even worked part-time even as a sports broadcaster, I still continue to work and drive, because it would be funny how many times I'd pull up with the bus with the uniform on, and people would say, "You look like the same guy that does sports on TV."
Yeah, I'm sure they knew you.
I am the same person that does sports on TV. So,
wow.
It's kind of interesting, and I've always enjoyed it. The greatest story that I can really share this with you real quick, I was doing sports at Channel 4. I was doing the Saturday night sports show years ago, and I was driving the bus also on a Saturday. I got a call, and Isaac Hayes, the former the entertainer, was coming to town to perform. And they asked me could I pick them up and take them to their sound check at Constitution Hall.
Wow.
To their hotel, and then take them to their concert that night.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, no problem. So I did. I picked the group up, the whole entourage, took them to the sound check at Constitution Hall, took them back to the hotel, then picked them up, took them to the concert that night, which started like at 7 or 8 o'clock. I dropped them off. Then I drove the bus up to Channel 4, changed clothes, did the 11 o'clock sport, got back in the bus, went back, picked them up after the concert, took them back to the hotel. So
From Isaac Hayes to NBC4, all in one night. Wow.
Double dipping.
To say the least. What a story. I mean, that just says something, your passion for both. And, I mean, you've shared that story, but I'd love to hear, Charlie, I mean, I know you've been in broadcasting for such a long time, but if you have a favorite moment, could you give me your favorite moment since you've been in broadcasting and why?
Well, I've had so many of them. You know, from the radio side, I started as a radio disc jockey in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was in radio, can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. While I was in radio, I mean, you know, you got the chance to meet so many people. Lionel Richie, when they were first starting, and the Commodores.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking it back. Yeah. I wrote the liner notes for the main ingredient, which is Cuba Gooding Sr.
Wow.
Main Ingredients album. That was great for as far as the radio side is concerned. So I got a lot of had a lot of respect and had a good relationship with a lot of the R&B groups from the, as they say, the old days. back, you know, with the Dells and the Supremes and the Four Tops and the Temptations and you name it. And I mentioned Isaac Hayes and Spine the Family Stones and the OJs. I mean, it just, and the list goes on and on and on. And then, I was fortunate enough to make the transition into television. And from that aspect, I think that the great thing about TV, especially from a sports perspective, is, you know, there are people who would give their right arm to do some of the things that I've been able to do.
Right.
It's painful. Traveling all over the world, as you mentioned, doing the Goodwill Games in Moscow in 1986. That was real big. That was Ted Turner's creation. And I was fortunate to go to Moscow. I spent a month over there between basketball, gymnastics, track and field. Had a great time. That was a great moment. Muhammad Ali, just getting to know him as a person more so than as a boxer. Most people, when they looked at Muhammad Ali, they only saw him when he was in the ring or when he was being boisterous at a press conference and things.
Mm-hmm.
But away from all of that limelight and the television cameras and the microphones, he was a very humble, very subdued individual. I never forget when I was working in Detroit, him coming into the studio one night to do an interview with me. And he walks in. He left his entourage out in the parking lot. He asked to just let him know where I was, who brought him into my office. He sat down in the chair and went to sleep. I mean,
wow.
So those are the moments that you treasure.
Right.
You know, I was. I mean, that's just one of the few things that I can go back and listen to and reminisce about. Remember Deion Sanders when he was baseball,
not right.
playing football, and was playing baseball, and they were in the World Series, and he had a some kind of a disagreement with the media and in general. Somebody said something that he didn't like on the air, one of the broadcasters, and he just refused to do interviews with anybody. And I'm covering the World Series. I think we were in Toronto. And, you know, as the players come out for batting practice before the game, you know, all the media was around the cage and they were trying to get an interview with him. And when he finished batting, he walked out of the cage and he called for me. He said, "You specifically, you come over." He says, "The rest of you stay back. The only person I'm going to talk to is Charlie Neal."
Wow.
You know, I mean, and I didn't know he was going to do that.
Right.
We kind of developed a relationship earlier because I had did a feature on him because he was trying to be a rapper at one time.
Mm-hmm. And
he was in a studio in Atlanta, and I went down and spent a whole day with him in Atlanta in his studio. And I was telling him, I said, at that particular time, I said, "You know, I was rapping long before you ever thought about it as a radio disc jockey." You know, I said, "I was the geeter with the heat of the big boss with the big hot sauce rocking the big TikTok on the big power tower." And he
Oh, wow.
he kind of got a big kick out of that. He thought that it was the greatest thing for sliced bread. So developed a relationship with that particular that situation there, you know, and it carried on and it became beneficial in covering the World Series that I was able to get the only interview that he would get. So,
that is amazing. And talks about his respect that he had for you. And, I mean, that just kind of talks about your work, you know, overall as a sports reporter. I mean, you were able to build these relationships with athletes, you know, where they trusted you to tell their story.
Right. And that's the whole thing. You know, you don't have to you have to tell the stories as they are, but you don't have to be vindictive or mean and be an assassin as a sports reporter or sports broadcaster to do your job.
Right. Oh, that was so well said. This is why I have you on, because you have the stories, you have the experience, and I thank you so much for sharing that with my listening audience. And now with that, I mean, I want to get into the show, Charlie. And, I mean, since you now live here in the D.C. area, I know you're a Philly native. I hope you don't mind kicking it off with my Doing It Big in the DMV segment, where I want to start, Charlie, with the Washington Redskins. Now, I know this is a subject that you're probably used to. I know. In this area, I mean, can you escape from them? I really feel like I might have to name my show the Kirk Cousins Show, because that's all anyone in D.C. is talking about right now, Charlie. So, of course, the Redskins ended their season 7-9, and they failed to make the playoffs, which disappointed a lot of the diehard hail to the Redskins fans here in the D.C. area. And, I mean, Jay Gruden, at the end of the year press conference, he kind of offered this kind of lukewarm praise for Kirk Cousins in his, you know, end-of-the-year review. He said the quarterback played well at times, but, of course, the bottom line is that they did not make the playoffs. Now, all questions are around Kirk Cousins, Charlie, because he will be a free agent once the league year ends in March, and then the Redskins have to decide if they want to use a franchise tag for a third time or apply the transition tag. And then, of course, they can also start negotiating a long-term deal at any time. And it's the third straight season. I mean, they take us with every single season that Cousins enters the offseason facing possibly going to free agency. So I'm just kind of curious, Charlie, to hear your thoughts if we will see Kirk Cousins in a Washington Redskins uniform come next season. Your opinion?
I really don't think so.
Okay.
Now, you know, I know that Jay Gruden, their coach, you know, said he does have a plan just in case, you know.
Yep.
He's to plan for it. They, you know, as a coach, or nothing is ever guaranteed.
Right.
And always have to have that plan B or that backup just in case things don't work out. You know, franchise. Cousins, you know, franchise tagging Cousins could cost them end up with somewhere like $35 million.
Yep.
You know, in a long-term deal, you know, might find him going somewhere else. I don't know that the Redskins, I don't really believe that they're sold on him, to be honest.
Right. I think that's why we're in this situation come every season, right? Every offseason we're asking this question.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the guy, is, you know, Kirk has been good. He's had some flashes of brilliance, you know, and he hasn't had a great supporting cast this year. I mean,
that too.
They did not, you know, Fryer did not step up as a receiver that they thought he was going to be.
Right.
You know, they lost Garcon and Deshaun Jackson.
Yeah, the two top receivers from last season, right.
But you lose key people. You have injuries.
Right.
Your offensive line. You have a lot of things that are not, and still he had a pretty decent season.
Right. It wasn't bad, if you look at his numbers.
Top 10, but he still had a pretty decent season.
Right.
So it's going to be very interesting to see what really transpires in March. I believe that's when all of this has to come down.
Exactly right, yeah. Countdown to March. It's crazy, though. I mean, you bring up so many good points, as you said. I mean, if they franchise tag, and you said it's about $35 million. It's $34.5 million to be exact. That's
right.
A lot of money when you have other players you need to sign. And then the transition tag is $28.8 million. That's still a lot of money. And then a long-term deal, for those who might be asking about that, that's still in the neighborhood of about $25 million. So if he stays in Washington, they're going to have to free up a lot of cap space to keep him. But then, of course, then you can't get other key needs that you need. And, of course, you said that they were hit by the injury bugs. I mean, do you pay Kirk Cousins all this money and you know you have other needs? It's a hard decision. And as you said, I just don't think they're sold. But, of course, if they don't get Cousins, another option they have is the veteran Colt McCoy, who is the only other quarterback on the Washington Redskins roster. And Gruden even said he's always been comfortable with Colt. But, of course, we haven't really got to see him play much. But I agree with you. I mean, he hasn't had the best supporting cast. The Redskins have been injured. And right now it seems like all reports are pointing to him possibly going to Denver, Charlie, because according to Sporting News' Eric Galco, the Denver Broncos are prepared to make a quote-unquote big offer for the soon-to-be free agent quarterback Kirk Cousins this offseason. So he's basically saying it's a two-team race between Denver and Washington. And then, of course, you know, John Elway over there really wants a quarterback, because the three quarterbacks that the Broncos had, Trevor Siemian, Brock Osweiler, and Paxton Lynch, guess what? They finished with a 73 passer rating for the season, 31st in the NFL, only above the Cleveland Browns. I mean, does it get any worse than that, Charlie? So I don't know. Denver's hungry for a quarterback.
Yes, they are. And, you know, the other thing that you have to look at, as much as fans love Kirk Cousins, is the team has not gotten any better.
Right.
Actually, their record has declined every year since he's been there. You know, he started out, I think, back in 2015 as 9-7. Then they went 8-7-1 a year ago. And then last season, this past season, they had a chance to finish 8-8 before they lost to the Giants, but they lost 7-9.
Right.
It's the one playoff game that he's been in since being a part of the Redskins. He lost that one.
Right. Got the hopes up and lost.
You know, so you put all those things together in perspective, and it's very interesting. He has a great arm. He finds receivers when they're open. But, you know, you have to have a combination of things. And like I said, I don't put all that on him, especially this past year. You know, I think a lot of it had to do with the way and what they put around him to help him put them in the air, or to bring the – you didn't have a receiver like a Garcon who was a beast.
Right. He could do it all.
When it was in the air.
Right.
And that's what he needs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
but that's what the hard part is. If they pay him, it's going to be hard to get those type of people for him.
That's true.
You know.
Yeah.
That's the conversation. And, I mean, as you said, we're not bashing Kirk Cousins City, the Washington Redskins fan. I mean, he was decent, as we said, but it hasn't been any growth, and it's all about growth. Yes, he did throw for 4,093 yards. He had 27 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, and I know he lost Chris Thompson, Trent Williams, and Jordan Reed, but still, I mean, this is a really what-have-you-done-lately-for-me league, and lately he hasn't done much for the Washington Redskins. So, I mean, only time will tell, but this offseason will be interesting. But now we'll move to basketball, Charlie, and talk about the Washington Wizards, where a guy that you might know by the name of Bradley Beal, who plays guard, was recently named Eastern Conference Player of the Week for games played through Christmas through Sunday, December 31st, so the end of the year. He was averaging 26.3 points, 6.3 rebounds, 3.8 assists, and 1.5 steals while shooting just under 500 from the field and the three-point range, 0.387. And he's led Washington over that time period to a 3-1 record. Charlie, I feel like Bradley Beal is finally getting the respect that he deserves, and I feel like finally this year he will have a chance to don that NBA All-Star uniform. So what are your thoughts on Bradley Beal heating things up here in Washington?
You know, he's actually done, I think, a lot more than people expected of him. One, you know, I mean, they just beat the Bulls a couple days ago.
Yeah.
39 points or something like that.
Right.
And I think tonight, as we're taping this show, they're playing the Knicks at the Capital One Arena, whatever they're calling it now. I can't keep up with
it. Yep, you're right, Capital One. I know, they keep changing it.
But, you know, they beat the Bulls on Sunday and with his 39 points. And, you know, John Wall has been out of the lineup for
right.
games this year. And so
he was injured.
He is, I think, kind of an unsung hero.
Yes.
With this franchise. And, yes, he does deserve possibly an all-star position in the upcoming NBA All-Star game.
Right.
And, you know, the Wizards are sitting right in the middle of the Eastern Conference pack, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If the playoffs start today, you know, the top eight teams go, and they're like number four or five, I believe it is,
right.
of the standings. And, you know, the last 10 games are 7-3. So they're one of the hot teams in the league right now, along with Toronto, Golden State, you know.
The Celtics.
Minnesota and, you know, Boston.
Right.
Minnesota's 8-2. I mean,
yeah.
And they're number 4 or 5 in the West. You know, of course, Golden State's on top at 8-2. They're 8-2 in the last 10 games. So when you look at what he's been able to bring to the franchise, to the team as a whole, it's nothing but praise for Bradley Beal. You know,
I mean, he deserves that. You know, he's been here. You know, I don't think he's been getting the credit that he deserves, as you said. I mean, I know he's playing in John Wall's shadow, but I mean, this is his fifth year. I mean, he's been playing some great basketball, and I agree with you. I mean, Bradley has really been leading the team, especially with John Wall suffering injury. I mean, he's stepped up, and that's what people, I think, wanted from him. And the biggest thing, he's been able to stay healthy. And I've always said, when Bradley Beal stays healthy, he is a great player. Then if that's not enough, because I know we have some statisticians and some numbers people, he became just the sixth player in NBA history and the first this season to record a stat line of at least 39 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, and 7 made threes in a game. And then he's also one of two players in the NBA this season to record 39-plus points, 9-plus rebounds, and 9-plus assists. And he's the first Wizard to do so since 1995. That's crazy. And then if that's not enough, that one week I mentioned, he accounted for 30% of the team's scoring. So Bradley Beal has basically been a major factor in Washington. So I'm like, if Wizards can keep this up, they're really going to continue to make noise in the East, and, you know, who knows what will happen come postseason. But now I want to switch it over to my Kelsey's Across the Nation segment, where I want to talk about HBCUs, because I think we both know they do not get enough attention. But something coming out actually Wednesday, it was announced out of the Southwestern Athletic Conference, Charlie, that Dewar Sharp, the commissioner of the conference, after 10 years of serving as commissioner, he's actually leaving the conference to pursue other opportunities. His departure is effective as of December 31st, 2017. He said, "Our folks." Oh yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That actually was actually, it was just announced,
right,
I believe, yesterday or today,
mm-hmm,
he was leaving.
Right.
It was known, well, let me say it was leaked out, I would say, prior to the Celebration Bowl.
Ah, okay.
And then because there was speculation as to whether or not he was even going to be at the Celebration Bowl.
Wow.
But it did show. It's kind of interesting. I think throughout Dua Sharp's tenure,
mm-hmm,
it has been kind of a love-hate relationship.
Right.
You know, I don't think that he was ever really taken in totally as a part of what the SWAC wanted to do. You got to remember, as a commissioner of a conference, you're at the mercy of the presidents and chancellors, the
mm-hmm,
council of presidents and the chancellors.
Right.
And, you know, he bumped heads with them on a lot of different things. I'm kind of actually surprised that he was there as long as he was. He made a lot of changes in the offices, the front offices of the conference over the years, and some of the things were kind of unexplained as to why those changes were made in terms of personnel,
okay,
in different positions. And so, and I know some of the people that were affected by it. And I know Dewar, and I know his wife, and they're great people. I'm not knocking him as a person, but I'm just saying it was just, you know, it probably is long overdue. You know,
right,
he went in back in 2008. Actually,
yep,
he was one of the people who, along with Dennis Thomas, the president of the commissioner of the Mideastern Athletic Conference, that helped secure the Celebration Bowl, which ESPN sponsors.
Right.
They were talking about this year being the last year that they would have the SWAC football championship. Now,
right,
with him gone, will that change? Was that a decision he made, or was that a decision that the presidents and chancellors made?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
And if they had it, they would not have it at the in Houston at the arena or the stadium where the Houston Texans play.
Right, like they usually do.
On campus facility, just from a financial standpoint of view. So
right,
a lot of things that are happening, you know. But he did some positive things. They did the social media, the mobile platforms, the SWAC digital network.
Yeah. Yeah.
Know? So there were things that he did play. So they have a person named Edgar Gant, who's the interim commissioner until they put their search party together and decide what they want to do.
Right. So it'll be interesting, as you said, to follow along. And you said all the good things he did, you know, and nobody's bashing him. He did do a lot. I mean, the Celebration Bowl, you know, sponsoring by ESPN, I think that was one of the huge ones, you know, that a lot of people saw. Then he formed partnerships with the NBPA and the NFL to provide professional development and internship opportunities for student athletes and administrators and coaches. And you said what he did with the digital network and stuff, but, you know, now the SWAC, you know, I guess really having a question of who is the correct, right person to lead, you know, the conference. And as you said, I mean, that SWAC football championship game, it'll be interesting to see what's decided there. Because, of course, when that news broke, Charlie, as I'm sure you know, a lot of people weren't too happy about that, you know, thinking that it could be gone. So, I mean, think big shoes to fill. And I think we will all continue to watch the SWAC to see what happens next. Because, of course, some great football coming out this week. Not even just football, but great sports as a whole coming from SWAC schools. So,
yeah,
we definitely
find that. You know, they were one of the conferences that had a number of football coaching changes this offseason.
Right.
Mississippi Valley, Pine Bluff, Prairie View, all had coaching changes, and it's going to be interesting to see going forward what happens as far as the SWAC is concerned. I mean, their basketball is just doing what they're supposed to be doing,
mm-hmm,
and they can do well as far as the Southwestern Athletic Conference is concerned. Texas Southern on the I think it's Texas Southern, or maybe Jackson State. I know Texas Southern has done well on the women's side over the years. I mean,
okay.
And they're, all these teams are just getting into conference play right now in terms of basketball. But,
right.
You know, you look at Jackson State, they're going to have a good year this year in basketball, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Southern, those are probably the top three teams on the men's side. On the women's side, you know, don't forget about Grambling. They're always a team to be reckoned with.
Right.
Pine Bluff might be a team to watch out for this year, Arkansas Pine Bluff, along with Jackson State and Alcorn.
Yeah, it'll be a very interesting season. And as you said, keep your eyes on them for basketball. I actually had the chance to see Grambling when they came up here to play a basketball game. But I think you said, I mean, the Flag, they have those contenders. So they're definitely a conference that everyone must keep their eyes on. And, Charlie, I want to stay with football and switch to my football Minuteman segment because, of course, over this weekend, we had bowl game mania heading into Monday with the new year. And, of course, the game that everyone is talking about is pretty much the Rose Bowl. Before I get into the games, I think the biggest game was for ESPN because Georgia's double overtime victory over Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl netted 26.8 million viewers. Get this, a 39% increase over last year's early semifinal game. So obviously, I mean, 39% increase. ESPN is pretty happy. I'm pretty sure they're toasting and everything after that. Despite the Sugar Bowl being a blowout as Alabama pretty much cruised over a victory 24-6 over Clemson, that contest had 21.1 million viewers, a 10% improvement rating. But the Rose Bowl viewership made the broadcast the fifth most watched telecast of all time, according to ESPN. So, wow. Basically, everybody and their mom was watching the Rose Bowl. But, Charlie, I mean, just watching that game, I mean, the double overtime, I mean, you have Georgia head coach Kirby Smart and all this good things going on the field. And then, of course, Baker Mayfield, his final game, unable to get that victory as they fell 54-48. What were your overall thoughts when you were watching this Rose Bowl and the Georgia team, you know, knock off Oklahoma?
Well, I tell you, it's one of those games. I say if the national championship game is anything like, you know, how sometimes semifinals and quarterfinal games should have been the championship game.
Yes, all the time. Mm-hmm.
That was the game that probably, if anything, should have been the championship game.
Oh, I know it.
And everything that you would want in a football game.
Right.
It kept you on the edge of the seat. And it was hard to root for one team over the other. Because,
right.
You know, of course, Oklahoma, you know, they were kind of they had the Heisman Trophy winner. And so people are looking at that. But then, you know, Georgia came to play also. They didn't, you know, going to take a back seat to anything.
Right.
Of course, Oklahoma had a chance to put it away or at least take that lead when they missed the field goal. The field goal in that second overtime that opened the door for Georgia because all Georgia had to do was they scored a touchdown.
Right after. Sonny Michael, direct snap, 27 yards for the touchdown, just two plays later. I mean, as you said, I mean, that literally had you on your seat. I don't care if you weren't an alumni of those two schools. What an exciting game. As you said, I wish that was the championship, you know, but I thought it was great how Georgia was able to come back because, of course, the Sooners, they had 31 first-half points, and I'm sure some people, you know, began to be like, oh, well, things might be over. But then the third quarter happened, right, Charlie? And Georgia's, I was just so surprised at Georgia's defense that third quarter. I mean, wow. Defense truly does win games, as we see why Georgia won. And I'm excited for them, you know, for the championship game. Go ahead.
You know, they say it's not over till the fat lady sings. she was singing for a while, but Listerine that she had in her mouth, she was still gargling. And so Georgia said, gargling, we got to change. And so that's what happened. They were back, you know?
Oh, I love that. I'm going to have to steal that from you. I hope you don't mind. That was a great way to put it. I mean, it was great. And then, honestly, you know, one of my favorite stories out of this game, Charlie, was that man, the Georgia freshman quarterback, Jake Fromm, who literally made a name for himself. Because, of course, everybody knew Baker Mayfield. But, I mean, he did so great. And, of course, he's a freshman. I mean, Georgia is going to just continue to grow with him. He was 20 of 29 for 210 yards and two touchdowns. And the biggest thing, he never really made a bad mistake. So, you know, this Georgia program is going to continue to grow. And this was with him playing a Heisman Trophy winner And Baker Mayfield, and of course, I mean, that direct snap at the end of the game, you know, where Sonny took it to the house, Georgia's in good hands. And I mean, Jake Fromm, I mean, what a story he has. And I think they'll just continue, you know, Kirby Smart, he has something with that quarterback. And watch out for the dogs in Georgia.
Yeah, and let me just ask you this. While we were talking, and of course everybody's focusing on Alabama and Georgia, the Southeast Conference Championship once again, I guess.
Yep.
The Southeast Conference final.
Right.
But Central Florida, what they do with Auburn to go 13-0.
Oh, yes.
You know, they're claiming a national championship.
Yeah.
So we know they, in the minds of everybody else, are not going to get it. But what are your feelings about what happened with Central Florida this year?
You know, that Auburn win. I mean, after you beat Auburn, I feel like any school, of course, would be excited, but especially Central Florida, because they're a program I don't think that has got enough credit, Charlie. And I think this is going to help us go back to the drawing board when we talk about how teams get to the playoffs. Because as you said, I love what you said. You said another SEC football championship game. Yes, everybody that knows sports knows the SEC. Yes, they're good at football. But at the end of the day, I mean, is it fair for all conferences? No. And I think everybody knows that. And Central Florida, I mean, I think they make a good case in point. And I don't want to take away any of the schools that are in it, but I do think this will help us, Charlie, to get back to the drawing board and evaluate how we pick the schools that get a chance to play for the most coveted game in college football, that national championship.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting. They feel so strongly about what they were able to accomplish.
Right.
Going to hold a parade.
Right.
They're going to have a championship parade.
They're doing it all.
Hang a banner in the stadium declaring themselves a national champion, you know?
That's a way for the committee to come look at you, right?
It's going to be very interesting. So,
it's crazy. 13-0, right? And then you said that victory over Auburn. I mean, UCF, people need to pay attention because they are doing some great things out there. And honestly, I like that they're doing all this because I think their players see, Charlie, how much the school believes in them, how much everybody around them believes in them. And again, I think they're putting all eyes on notice. And I think sometimes you have to shake things up, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Well, they and you know, they and the ironic thing was the whole coaching staff was leaving.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the coach decided after he got the Nebraska job that he would stay around and coach them in the game against Auburn, and you know, did a fantastic job. In fact, his successor was in attendance at the game and got a chance to see what he has to, you know, to work with in the upcoming year.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, usually after you said it, though. I mean, they're literally doing everything. Charlie, they even changed their Twitter account to the 2017 National Championship Champions, and then they pinned to the top of their Twitter page, which I love, the quote from the university president that referred to the Knights as the national champion. So if they said they're the national champions and they played a great game, hey, I'm going to let them, you know, have their shine and let them have their fun. And before we end it, though, Charlie, I want to go back because I feel like we can't go on without talking about Baker Mayfield and just, you know, what he did for Oklahoma. I mean, at the end of the game, you know, you saw him going up to trying to find as many teammates as he could, you know, to give them each a hug. And then that long embrace he had for his tight end, Mark Andrews, who, of course, at Oklahoma started his career when Mayfield did on the 2014 scout team offense. I mean, that hug in itself just told, you know, how close they got. But, you know, a lot of questions went around actually a player from Georgia linebacker, Dad and Bellamy, who began hollering at Mayfield, "Humble yourself," you know, and that was, you know, that something that drew a lot of media members to look on. But I'm just curious to see it from you, Charlie. I mean, do you think that was, you know, something that Mayfield needed to hear? Do you think, you know, Davin was doing too much from Georgia, you know, and that, you know, Mayfield's just Mayfield, just play the game? What were your thoughts about that whole situation?
You know, when you have so much at stake, emotions sometimes get in the way of common sense.
Okay.
And I think that is probably or possibly what happened in terms of the player from Georgia.
Right.
Knowing Baker, I think, took the high road.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get caught up into those type of things. Like I said, there's too much at stake.
Right.
And people have a tendency sometimes. I remember one play, and I can't remember which game it was, where a player was getting ready to get into another player's face, and the coach or assistant coach came down the sideline and snatched him. He could have gotten flagged for a horse collar tackle. You know, he snatched the player off the field. We don't
wow.
need this type of any kind of penalties, stupid penalties, or doing something that's not necessary at this juncture in the game. We're trying to get into the national championship. We're trying to win a football game.
Right.
And, you know, don't forget why we came here. You know, what brought us here. And don't get caught up in you know, in some petty fat with another player for no reason at all.
And you're right. I think he took the high road, you know, because as you said, we didn't hear Baker say anything that. So I feel like you're right. I mean, that's what we saw from him. I think we needed Charlie to see that because, remember, earlier in the year, he got in trouble for some of his antics that he did on the sideline during the game.
And I think he grew up. He grew up a lot. He learned
mm-hmm.
a lot. And he understands because of who he was, because he was a Heisman Trophy winner, that some, you know, the target is on you.
Right.
You know, anytime. The national champion, Clemson, from a year ago. The you know the bull they're you know they're sitting as a with a bullseye on. Same thing with whoever wins it this year. It's same thing with the Heisman Trophy winner. You know, anytime you are the cream of the crop at the top of the heap, it's the bullseye. You're in the bullseye, and people are going to come after you in any way they perform and try to rattle your cage. So.
Right, and that's what we saw, you know. But as you said, I mean, Baker, you know, he did not respond back. And, of course, he knows all eyes are on him. You know, this is really his chance to prove that he has grown up. You know, Georgia might have the last laugh, of course, since they are going to their first national championship. Since Herschel Walker, oh, my gosh, carried the Bulldogs there in 1980, it's crazy to believe that. But it's nice that, you know, they get to play in their hometown at Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I mean, does it get any better?
Is interesting. They are going to be playing at home. I mean, it's just like we talk about the NFL. The Minnesota Vikings are hoping to play their Super Bowl in their own.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something?
It never does.
It never does. And it's crazy, you know, when that type of thing happens. And, of course, right, you know, the Vikings fans, you know, are rooting for that to happen. And but, you know, Baker, I mean, I think his story in itself, I mean, Charlie, of course, is just amazing because, of course, he is the first former walk-on to win the Heisman since the NCAA began allowing athletic scholarships in 1950. I mean, that just talks about he's making history, and I think he'll continue to because he is a great player. He's a transfer, of course, from Texas Tech. He arrived at Oklahoma back in 2014 without an invitation, much less a scholarship, and he actually played intramural softball while he
mm-hmm.
was waiting for the Sooner spring practices to start. I don't think a lot of people know that. About Baker. But then, of course, he helped to, you know, make Oklahoma this football program that really people weren't talking about. He led them to three consecutive Big 12 titles and two playoff appearances. I mean, and his story is great just because a lot of people, you know, didn't believe in him because in high school they thought he was an undersized recruit that was too small and too slow to play at the FBS level. So a lot of coaches passed on him. And, I mean, look what he's continued to do. So Baker Mayfield is definitely someone that everybody should keep an eye on. And I know the Sugar Bowl probably didn't surprise you, Charlie, because how can you ever count Alabama out? But I'm just curious, you know, what were your thoughts on, you know, Alabama pretty much dominating both sides of the ball during the Sugar Bowl and routing Clemson 24-6?
Well, I think they had a flashback from a year ago.
Yeah.
Clemson away from them in the last
right.
game a year ago.
Oh, and that game was so good.
I think they quietly were, you know, behind the scenes, were taking names and saying, hey, it's time for us to do what we need to do to get back and avenge what happened to us a year ago against Clemson.
Right.
I think they, you know, they continually harass Kelly Bryant from the start of the game. You know, and I guess the nose guard, Deron Payne.
Oh, yes, 308-pound guard.
You know, touchdown after picking off
crazy.
Bryant, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they were a lot of people say they would play off more on reputation than anything else, but they showed that they belong.
Right, right.
That's pretty important. You know, I mean, in the 4 years since they've had this college football playoff, they've made the title game every year but one.
It's crazy. So, they've dominated college football.
They have. And for the sixth time, since Saban has been there at Alabama,
right.
They're playing for the national championship. So you can't take that away from them. They're like the New England Patriots of college football.
Pretty much.
You check up in New England, and you can never count them out. They're machines.
Right.
You know, no matter what happens, no matter who's on, they're one of those teams that no matter what the personnel is, Belichick has a way of putting them where they need to be when they
mm-hmm.
need to. You know, whether mm-hmm. you like them or not. You don't have to be a fan, but you have to
right.
been able to do.
So well said. I mean, Alabama pretty much, you know they're going to be there. I mean, not only do they have a good team, you know, a lot of those guys, guess what, you might see in the NFL because that's the type of players that they produce. And that game just showed it. I'm sure Deshaun Watson, Charlie, was watching that game, wishing he could be back and to participate in that game. I mean, but Alabama just continued. I mean, they did everything right, and that's why they will be in the championship game. And I think Georgia, of course, will have their hands full with the Roll Tide. But and interestingly enough, I thought this was great that the game, you know, Alabama did so well on both sides of the ball that the coaches actually named 7 players of the week on Wednesday following the team's win in the Sugar Bowl. On offense, they had Bradley Bozeman, they had running back Damian Harris, wide receiver Calvin Ridley, and then on defense, they had linebacker Rashawn Evans, linebacker Jennings, and then on special teams, they had cornerback Tony Brown. So talk about, and quarterback Trayvon Diggs. So talk about, you know, everything coming together. When you can name 7 players of a game, you know something's going right. But now I want to kick it off, Charlie, into my biggest headlines in sports. And we kind of already touched on it. We're going to talk about the NFL playoffs. We already talked about the Patriots, who, no surprise, they are back in the playoffs. But the story that I love the most, and I'm sure everybody loves, has been the Buffalo Bills, Charlie, getting back into the playoffs. They last made it back in 1999. Just think about how much the world has changed in general since the Bills have made the playoffs. I mean, it's crazy. 1999, there's been so many babies born. I mean, Facebook was made in 2004, YouTube in 2005, Twitter in 2006, and Instagram in 2010. I mean, all the social media's happened. Cubs and Red Sox winning the World Series. I mean, we had teams relocating. We had new teams formed. How big is this for the city of Buffalo? As I know, they were all watching that Ravens-Bengals game. And when the Bengals, Charlie, converted that 4th-and-12, turned it into a touchdown. And the Buffalo Bills, of course, were able to get in after the Ravens were defeated. I mean, what are your thoughts on the city of Buffalo? And what do you think this team will do in this wild card round of the playoffs?
Well, you got to remember, it wasn't that long ago when Rex Reed was the coach up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, they ran him out of town.
Yep.
He's able to turn things around. You know, and they're in a, you know, Buffalo is not in a, that conference, I mean, that they're in with New England and Miami and the Jets, you know.
Right.
It's a dogfight.
Right.
The whole NFC East with the Redskins and the Dallas Cowboys and the Giants and the Eagles, and, you know. I mean, it's not easy. And for them to, you know, they got a little help. But the fact of the matter is, they're there.
Right.
You know, regardless of how you got there, as long as you got there, honestly, you know, and you got a little help from your friends down the road. But it's refreshing to see, you know, look at how many teams that are in the playoffs this year that were not, didn't even have winning records a year ago.
Yeah.
I mean,
been crazy to see the turnaround in some of those teams.
In the playoffs, you know.
Right.
Rams in the playoffs. Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, I mean, it just goes on, and you have Buffalo in the playoffs. So that's refreshing to know that we have some other people that have an opportunity. Minnesota is in the playoffs. So those are the teams that you'd like to see, and you're glad to see that happen because we're used to seeing Seattle, and we're used to seeing New England. Of course, they're there again.
Right.
Some teams we're used to seeing, and they're there day in and day out, year in and year out.
is. I mean, and that's what we're getting with them. And then even the Tennessee Titans are another team. So both the Bills and the Titans finished the season 9-7. And who would have thought at the beginning of the year that these two teams would be in the playoffs? If someone had these two teams in, you must have been an extreme fan, because I'm pretty sure no one else thought that would happen. Because believe it or not, the two squads were actually among the worst performers to make the NFL playoffs since the 16-game schedule was implemented back in 1987.
Right.
So that just tells you, I mean, these teams weren't the teams that you thought would be there. And then you said the teams that we expected to be there. I mean, the Patriots and the Eagles are in the playoffs, and they actually have the best point differential in the league this season at plus 162. And, of course, both those teams are the top seeds in their conferences. But I'm like you. I like seeing these new teams that will be in it. Of course, I mean, the Patriots and the Eagles, the Steelers and the Vikings all have first-round byes, so this weekend they will be watching to see the action that goes on. But the Bills will be taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have had a tremendous season this year, also doing very well. The Titans will take on Kansas City Chiefs, and we have the Falcons, who, of course, who could forget the Super Bowl last year back in the playoffs, taking on the Rams, and then the Panthers taking on the red-hot Saints. So I'm just curious, out of those matchups, I mean, let's start with Buffalo Bills and Jaguars. Who are you picking, Charlie, to win that game?
I don't know. I'm going to, because the game, it's not an easy one to pick.
Yeah.
So probably with Buffalo.
Okay.
Only because I believe they played in a tougher division.
Okay.
And then Jacksonville did, although Jacksonville has really stepped up and played well down the stretch when they needed to. And that's very, very important. I mean, you know, when do you put your foot on the, you know, on the gas pedal and do what you need to do?
Right.
I think Vinny Lyer is a person you got to watch out for Jacksonville.
Yeah.
As far as a sack person, he'll be in business offensively. They have the league's top rushing attack against the Bills. The Bills would rank near the bottom in run deep. So it could, you know, I don't know. It's gonna, it could be a quick afternoon for Jacksonville.
Okay.
Let me say that. Let me change. I think I'm going to go with Jacksonville.
And okay, so Jacksonville.
They're at home.
Right.
They're the home team. And, you know, it's hard in the playoffs. Home teams get, you get there, you become a home team for whatever reason, because you are what? You've done what it takes to become the home team.
Right.
So to go on the road and win in the playoffs when so much is at stake is very hard. I'm going to go with Jack.
Right. It can, you know, it can definitely be harder. And I think that's a great matchup, because Jacksonville, I mean, their defense alone, I mean, you can't say enough about just the defensive presence that they have. But then, I mean, the Buffalo Bills, you can't count them out. And I just love the Bills' story to getting there. I mean, Tyrod Taylor and himself, I mean, do you remember the game that he was benched, Charlie? And people were like, what in the world is happening? Then they sent up a backup and he throws like, what, four picks in like the first minutes that he was playing. And then now we have, you know, Tyrod back in that spot. But you're right, I mean, they will be traveling there. And, you know, of course, it can be hard, of course, to be that team that does travel. But now I want to switch it over to the NFC side. And I'm going to go to this Falcons-Rams game, just because, Charlie, after the Super Bowl last year, I know the Falcons are playing with that chip on their shoulder. So do you think that will be enough to get them past the Rams, you know, in this first round of the playoffs in the NFC?
Falcons, I believe, were lucky to be in the playoffs, number
okay.
one. I like the Rams. I like the fact that they have Todd Gurley.
And he's had an amazing season, MVP-worthy season.
Now the Falcons have a pretty good run defense, but the Rams are very dangerous because of Todd Gurley. And then, of course, their defense will give Matt Ryan some heartache throughout the afternoon.
Right.
I think in that situation, I would probably go with the Rams, you know, to beat the Falcons at home. The Falcons have not been a consistent team throughout the season.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that is probably going to hurt them. They have not
right.
throughout the season.
And consistency is so vital because, honestly, when I was watching that Bengals-Ravens game, I figured the Baltimore Ravens would lose because, same thing, they weren't consistent. And all they had to do, they were the one team that all they had to do was win. And, of course, they didn't. Now we see the Bills in there. But consistency is so vital. You can't all of a sudden expect your team to have, you know, everything clicking on all cylinders, especially come playoff time because, you know, it's more pressure on you. It's more eyes on you than if you have rookies, you know, it's their first time there. So it can be a lot more pressure. So the NFL playoffs, it'll be a good one. I think this weekend we're all in for some good games. But now, you know, staying on the NFL topic, Charlie, I mean, some big news came out when it was announced that Arizona Cardinals quarterback Carson Palmer actually announced his retirement on Tuesday in an open letter after 14 seasons with three teams. He's 38 years old. He was drafted first overall back in 2003, but he felt like now was the right time to walk away from football. Now, of course, most people thought his, you know, career this season was already pretty much over. And some people saw this coming, of course, because week 7 back in London, if you remember when he broke his left arm against the Los Angeles Rams, and then Blaine Gabbert and Drew Stanton came in and started the rest of the games for the rest of the season. But Palmer, I mean, I think he's been very special in Arizona. He went 38-21-1 during 5 years in Arizona, which, of course, included leading the Cardinals to a 13-3 record and a spot in the NFC Championship game during an MVP caliber 2015 season, but that was the furthest he went in the postseason. But now I'm just curious, Charlie, to hear your thoughts on, you know, Carson Palmer and how the sport of football and the NFL will miss him.
Well, you know, anytime you've had that kind of longevity in the NFL, that's saying a lot. I mean, it's like Larry Fitzgerald. I mean,
right.
It's hard to last that long. I mean, he's one of those, like Drew Brees, like Brady, and those type of people don't come along that often. Carson Palmer's had a pretty good career.
Right.
You know, through and what did he do this past year? 9 touchdowns, I think he threw.
Yeah, it wasn't the best year, and that's why I think, you know, people probably saw his retirement coming. He did finish his career with 46,247 yards, 294 touchdowns, and 187 interceptions with a career completion percentage of 62.5. He's 11th in career completions, 12th in passing yards and touchdown passes, and 14th in attempts. But, of course, now the big question is that now the Cardinals will have options at quarterback, and, of course, that's pretty much what they're going to focus on. Because, of course, now the team needs a starting quarterback. And right now the free agent quarterback class is, most people are saying, is stronger than it's been, Charlie, in most years because, of course, one guy we talked about, Kirk Cousins, will hit it. Teddy Bridgewater, Case Keenum, and Sam Bradford are pretty much the big names that most people think will hit the open market. But then, of course, there's also speculation about Chiefs quarterback Alex Smith and Buffalo Bills quarterback Tyrod Taylor that could also become available. And his retirement actually clears up $14 million. In cap space. But then, of course, the Cardinals could re-sign one of their free agents. They have Drew Stanton, Blaine Gabbert, and Matt Barkley. So, I mean, they do have the 15th pick, Charlie, in the draft coming up. And then, of course, on the college side, I mean, USC's Sam Darnold, UCLA's Josh Rosen, Wyoming's Josh Allen, of course, Oklahoma's Baker Mayfield, and Louisville's Lamar Jackson are all possible quarterbacks, but the former, you know, coach of the Cardinals pretty much, Arians pretty much wanted a pocket passer with a strong arm. But now that the Cardinals are looking for a new coach, who knows, you know, what type of quarterback they'll have. So tell me, I mean, what do you think is next for the Cardinals quarterback situation, Charlie?
You know, it's hard to say when you got to remember, Cleveland has the number one pick.
Yep, so they're going to get the best quarterback, of course, out the draft.
They take, if they decide to go with a quarterback, which they need.
Yes, which I hope they do.
Could be Mayfield going there. After 38 years old, Palmer leaves after, 15 years in the league.
Right.
Which is, I think, again, an amazing run. Nothing spectacular, but longevity. And able to stay And like you said, Bruce Arians is leaving. So it depends on what the new coach coming in feels about what he has, what he inherits, number one.
True,
number two,
right.
What he feels he needs, what type of offense he wants to run, and who would be best suited for what he's trying to do.
Right.
So those are all of the things that you have to look at. It's hard to really put any type of positive spin on it right now. It's not like, you know, the quarterback retired and the coach stayed. You not only have your quarterback leaving, but you have your coach leaving. So you're filling two positions for two critical areas in your organization, coach and your quarterback. So
right.
A lot of it is going to depend, first of all, on who you get as a new coach, and then what he wants to do and how he feels about what he inherits as far as the incumbent quarterbacks are concerned, and then what's out there on the free agent market. Could it be a Kirk Cousins? Could it be someone from another team? Could it be,
right.
You know, so those are the types of things that it's very hard to really pinpoint anything specific until they get a person on board. Then you can say, okay, this coach so-and-so who they just hired, he likes this type of quarterback. For example, if John Gruden takes the Oakland Raiders job,
right.
You know what he's going to be looking for and the type
right.
of person he's going to be looking for. And
right.
and if Matt Patricia from New England goes to Detroit,
mm-hmm.
you know, what is he looking for?
Right.
So those are the types of things that, you know, even though he's a defensive coach, he still has in his mind what kind of offense he wants to run.
Right. So all questions, as you said, are pretty much, I'm like you, it starts with whatever coach they get, because then, of course, you have to see what type of quarterback works best for that coach. You know, will it be a pocket passer like Arians liked, or will it be, you know, not a pocket passer? It'll be very interesting to see. But, Charlie, I want to say in football, because some other news that really broke that everyone, I think, was pretty much surprised about was that the assistant coach is gone in Cincy. But guess what? Head coach Marvin Lewis is coming back for a 16th try at a playoff victory in Cincinnati. Yes, you guys heard me right. This is not fake news. Lewis did meet with the media on Wednesday after he got a 2-year extension through 2019, and he pretty much talked about how his team, of course, needs to change. He said pretty much what we're all saying. They need better players, better coaching, and then, of course, they need better performance. And, I mean, Marvin Lewis, he must have been doing something that they like in Cincy, because he currently has the second longest active coaching tenure in the NFL behind somebody that you mentioned before, Charlie, yes. Bill Belichick, you know, I mean, wow. But Bill Belichick on the other end, even though he's been in there long, Charlie, he has 5 Super Bowl titles. Lewis hasn't even won a playoff game yet. So what were your thoughts when you heard that Marvin Lewis would be staying in Cincinnati?
Well, you know, every now and then you have something on somebody. And I don't know whether he caught the owner doing, but for him to be able to hold on to his job.
Oh, it's crazy. It is crazy.
Bad coach. He's not a bad person.
Right.
You know,
everybody likes Marvin. He's a nice guy.
He's been to the playoffs. The knock against him is he can't win in the playoffs. So he
right.
takes the team. They're right on the cusp of doing something good. And I would love to have heard Cincinnati talk radio today.
Oh, my gosh. That was the place to be, I know, today. Because, I mean, it's just crazy. But the owner, Mike Brown, basically said he hates change and he wants to give Lewis another chance. He's 82 years old.
The NFL is what have you done for me lately? It's that
yep. Yep.
And he got a 2-year extension through 2019.
Yep.
He said, you know, better performance, better coaching, better players. But he said these things for a while, you know.
Right, right.
The second longest active coach, as you mentioned earlier, behind Belichick. But Mike Brown, who's the owner, he hates change.
Right.
And he's willing to give him another chance. I mean,
it's crazy. But then the part that gets me is that they let go of the assistant head coach and offensive line coach for 23 seasons, Paul Alexander, but then you keep the head coach. But then if that's not enough, Charlie, also the 0-16 Browns actually retain head coach Hugh Jackson for another season. So I don't know what's going on, because, you know, the Browns and Bengals, They've played a total of 64 games the past two seasons, and collectively together, they've only won 14. And it's crazy.
They said that earlier, before the season ever ended, that they were not going to make a change in Cleveland.
Right, and
Denver,
we see that's true.
Denver didn't make a change.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets have not made a change, and we're talking about our African-American coaches that
right.
are in the league right now. The only one that really was in Detroit, they made a change there.
Right.
San Diego is, he's still hanging in there.
Right.
It's going to be very interesting to see who lands those six positions and jobs that are open right now,
It'll be interesting.
The New York Giants, you have the Indianapolis Colts, you have the Detroit Lions, you have the Oakland Raiders.
Right,
so
many firings. Yeah,
Arizona
lots
Cardinals.
Of opening.
And there's one more I think I'm leaving out and I can't remember. Oh, Oakland.
Yeah.
Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, with all of those six openings, it's going to be interesting. In fact, they thought there was a talk that it might have been as many as 10 to 12 or 13 openings.
Ooh, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. But, they made some changes. Marvin made some changes. The defensive coordinator is interviewing for the same job with the Raiders. He may have to find a replacement there. Bill Lazor is the offensive coordinator there. And, they had the worst offense in the NFL this year, basically.
Right.
Cincinnati did.
Yeah.
Had Paul Alexander, who was assistant head coach for 23 years, they let him go.
Right.
So you've got to make some – and I think one of the things Marvin felt he didn't have control over was the coaching staff.
Right, and it seems like they're starting to let him have that control now.
Well,
time will tell. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, they went 0-7 in the playoffs. I mean, lost five straight opening round games from 2011 to 2015. They haven't won a playoff game since the 1990 season. It's the sixth longest streak in league history. It's crazy, to think. And then if that's not enough, we know it all goes back to the bottom line. And the Bengals' attendance actually plummeted last season. Say that 10 times fast. To one of the lowest in the league. They had 10,000 empty seats for a home game against their rival Steelers. I mean, what? We all know it's about ticket sales, and they still bring back the same product to the field. So, as you said, Cincinnati Talk Radio, Cincinnati fans in general, I would just love to see, what they think of this whole situation. But quickly, Charlie, now I want to switch it over to basketball, where Isaiah Thomas made his return as the Cavs defeated the Trailblazers 127-110 in Isaiah Thomas's regular season debut. It was his first time taking the court since May 19th, 2016, from which at that time he actually shot 50% from the floor. But Thomas, in his debut, he scored 17 points, 3 assists, and 19 minutes. He got a standing ovation when he returned to the floor, and then I loved it because, with his first trip down the floor, he picked up an assist, and he actually got the pass to his old former teammate from Boston, the one and only Jay Crowder. I mean, just watching him play, I mean, I don't think it got any better than that. Now Cleveland just has another weapon coming off the bench, and I mean, they got the job done. So what did you think about Isaiah Thomas's debut the other night?
Oh, I mean, it was long overdue, much anticipated, and he did why he performed the way and the reason for why they brought him to Cleveland.
Right.
So it's not a surprise. Anytime a person sits out for a while, you wonder how they're going to respond the first game back if you sat out with an injury like Steph Curry had to sit out a few games. But, I mean, Isaiah was out for a lot longer period of time.
Right.
And you don't know how they're going to respond. But, again, Cleveland brought him in to do what he did. And if he did anything less, it would be disappointing.
I
I mean, basically, right? And now Cleveland just has another weapon coming off the bench, another weapon for LeBron. I mean, Cleveland, I don't know, Charlie. The East is just literally, we do have these super teams. Of course, we have Golden State in the West, and now we have Cleveland. I mean, just when you thought the Cavs, I know they didn't start the way everybody thought, but now that they've got it together, 13 straight wins at home and with Isaiah Thomas back, I don't know. It's going to take a lot of work for teams to stop the Red Hot Cavaliers. So, I mean, what a debut. And I loved his son, Jaden. I mean, still in the post-game show. And I love that his son, Jaden, said his favorite part about going to the games was, of course, seeing LeBron James. Have to love your son saying that, right?
Dad, I came to see LeBron.
I know. Sorry, Dad. But, I mean, LeBron was on the floor as I was watching LeBron. I love that. That's always the best part. I love all the athletes' kids. But, I mean, Charlie, thanks so much for coming on and kicking it with me here on Listening with Cannon. It was such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having me, and you have a good year at 2018, and look forward to talking to you once again.
Well, thank you so much. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listening with Cannon. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until next week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with KNN from venues around the region, email Kelsey at KelseyNelson@FoxSports1340AM.com. For more information about Listen In with KNN, visit FoxSports1340AM.com. Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.